Alright, Parshas Shlach. Parshas Shlach, page 798 in your Chumash. This is the Parsha, of course, the Parsha with the incident of the spies in which they are sent by Moshe and the Jewish people to check out the land of Eretz Yisrael. As they do, and they come back with their reports. Basics of the story we are, of course, familiar with. They come back with an evil report about Eretz Yisrael, describing how we will be, the Jewish people will be unable to take it and conquer it. The Jewish people panic. They cry. Why did Hashem take us here? We're just going to die. And then, of course, this night is a night of bad tidings in Jewish history. This night that we cried, and of course, led to the 40-year wandering in the desert. Okay, that's the basics of the story. We are familiar with. So, as we've grown accustomed to, like to focus on little different sections each week. So, what I want to focus on this week, let's learn the psukim inside that actually describe the spies' report. Let's actually go through how they return from their mission and what they go through and say, and that which can be derived from there. There are a number of beautiful rashis and lessons to be derived from there, and we'll hopefully at the end we'll have time we'll tie it all under a nice theme. So the parasha begins again on 798, 799, the beginning of the 13th chapter, Perek Yud Gimel, with the list of those leaders of the tribes who are going to be sent. You'll notice in the bottom, Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17, Moshe gives them the command what it is that they're supposed to be looking for. Moshe says in verse 18, see the land, how is it? The people, are they strong or weak? Are they few or numerous? What about the land? Is it good? Is it bad? The cities in which they dwell, are they open? Are they fortified? And whether or not the land is fertile or lean, with trees, without trees. Those are the list of things, and long list that Moshe says to the spies, go out, check it out, and come back to us with a report defining for us the situation, what the cities are like, what the people are like, what the land is like, what we can expect as we are about to enter into this land. So the Torah then describes how they go up, and they search around, they come back with these large clusters of grapes and pomegranates and figs that were carried on poles, of course the famous symbolism that we have even today in the land of Eretz Yisrael. And then let's pick up from verse 25, Pasuk Chafei, which is the return of the spies as they go through their report. Let's learn this inside. Pasuk Chafei, Vayashuvu Mitor Ha'aretz. They returned from spying out the land. Mikates Arboim Yom, at the end of 40 days. Torah describes how, this is again just our introduction to our passage. They've been there for 40 days. They return. Rashi here parenthetically points out that a 40-day trip to spy out the land of Israel is pretty incredulous. It's too large. Rashi says it's 400 parsas by 400 parsas, a certain measure of land. It would take 40 days just to go from one side to the other side. And here they went not just from one side to the other side, they went all throughout the land and back within 40 days. Rashi comments, based on the sages, that this was done miraculously, since Hashem already had it known that the punishment for the spies would be corresponding to the amount of days that they were out in the land of Israel. Later we'll describe at the end of the parasha, for the 40 days they will get 40 years of wandering in the desert. So Hashem made a miracle, and they were actually able to travel through the land at a much faster pace than would have otherwise been expected, in preparation or in foresight, so to speak, for that. But in any case, that's verse 25. Yashuvu mitor, they returned from spying out the land at the end of the 40 days. Chaf Vav, 26. Vayelchu vayavu el Moshe ve'el Aharon ve'el kol adas v'dei Yisrael. They went and they came to Moshe and to Aaron and to the entire assembly of the children of Israel. El Midbar Paran Kadesha. So he told us where it is that they are going. They are going to the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. Vayashivu osam davar, that's kol ho'eda. They brought back to them and to the entire assembly. Who is the them and who is the entire assembly? Them will be Moshe and Aaron. Correct. Rashi points out they returned a report to them and to the entire assembly. Vayarum es pri ha'aretz, and they showed them the fruit of the land. So you see here a that the spies gave their report publicly at the same time to Moshe and Aaron as to the entirety of the Jewish people. So it wasn't a matter of them debriefing, so to speak, with Moshe and Aaron, at which point they said to them what they had found, what their assessment was, and then let Moshe and Aaron deal with it, explain. They immediately, the first report, the first word that anyone is hearing about this is in public, is in front of everybody. Yeah, which is always a danger as a rabbi of a synagogue, with someone, and I always have this, when we have a guest lecturer come to speak, so we find out, like everybody else, what he's planning on saying as he says it. There's no screening process necessarily where we know it beforehand what's going to be said. It's just, and that's what happens. You know, this is how it goes. You hope. That's why you have to be careful as to who you select. So here the spies go ahead and they give their report publicly in front of everyone at the same time. Now there's a phrase in here which is extraneous. What phrase in verse 26 is unnecessary? They went and came to Moshe and Aaron and to the entire assembly of the children of Israel.
Already said they returned.
Good. There are two verbs in the beginning of this verse. Two verbs which don't seem to add very much. At least one of them doesn't. We have the spies returning in verse 25. They returned from spying out the land at the end of the 40 days. They went and came to Moshe and Aaron. What should it have said? They came. Absolutely. That's correct. You guys are beginning to think like the sages. That's right. The verse should have simply said, they've returned from spying out the land. They came to Moshe and to Aaron and to all the people, and they gave over their report. The Torah adds a word there. They went and they came to Moshe and to Aaron. So if you're just reading it quickly, as we're reading it on Shabbos morning in Shul, so you might not notice that. But if you're paying attention to every phrase, that should strike you as odd. What do you mean they went and they, where'd they go? They just came to Moshe and Aaron. So the sages here point out something which is a critical insight in understanding this entire episode. This episode, as you know, is one which is discussed at great length by all of the commentators. What exactly took place? How did the spies come to this? Why did they come to this? What was underlying this particular sin? So the sages here point something out. Rashi quotes, we'll read it in a moment, which will give us the foundation for that understanding. Rashi here comments, the second to last line on the page in Rashi, in the second column there, all the way towards the bottom, in verse Chofa, Vayelchu Vayavo, Mahu Vayelchu, says Rashi. What is this extra word, and they went? So Rashi says, Lahakish Halichoson Libiyoson. Halicha means going, and Bia means coming. Those are the two words in the phrase, right? They went, and they came. What are those two extra phrases doing there? To say that not just this particular going and coming in which they returned and they went to speak to the people, we're talking about when they initially went on their mission was similar to the way that they returned from their mission. The halicha, the first verb of the phrase, halicha, means to go. When they initially set out on their mission, is connected to the word, and they came, when they returned from their mission. That these two things are somehow linked together. Says Rashi, what is that to teach us? Did I lose everybody on that point? Let me just hold up. Yeah. No, please settle down. So we have here the two words in the pasuk in verse 26. The extra phrase vayilchu and vayavo'u, and they came, they went, and they came. Rashi says the extra phrases are not just a reference to this particular episode in which the spies have returned and are now going to give the report. This is referring to when they initially went, they left, they went, and they came back. That there's something connecting when they left on their initial journey 40 days prior, that is connected to the way that they returned 40 days later. In what way is their leaving connected to the way that they came back? Says Rashi, Ma bi'oson be'etzara'a. Just like when they returned with an evil intent. They returned with a plan, so to speak, to blaspheme the land, to say bad things about it. Because we know that when they returned, they already unified in that. One might have thought as follows. maybe that was based on what they saw. They saw things. They got frightened. They realized, we can't take this land. This is crazy. So that when they came back, they said this report. But when they set out, what was their mindset when they set out? What were the people thinking at the time that they left? When they first set out. So one could have made the argument, well, when they set out, they had all the right intentions. These were upstanding people. The Torah specifically describes them with the word anoshim. They were men. The word anashim, to describe people, Rashi says, in the very beginning of the parasha, is always reserved for people of greatness. It's a word reserved to refer to somebody of stature. All 12 of these people, were leaders of their tribes, and were people of knowledge, were people of stature, people of importance. So I would have made the argument that when they left, they all had good intentions. They were planning on doing that which they were asked to do, spy out the land and come back with an appropriate report. And they were frightened by some of the things that they saw, so that when they came back, they let go of an evil report. Rashi says the Torah doesn't want you to think that way. The Torah adds the words, Vayelchu Vayavo'u. They went and they came to Moshe. Why the extra phrase, they went and they came? To connect their going, their initial going at the beginning of the 40 days, to their return at the end of the 40 days. What's the way they're connected? Just like when they returned with an evil intent. You should know that when they went with an evil intent as well. Says Rashi, I'll read it to you inside, Ma bi osan ve'etza ro'o, just like their return, when they came to us, was with an evil intent. Af halichoson ve'etza ro'o, so too when they left, they were a etza ro'o. They had not such good intentions and plans on coming back with an evil report. Now we'll get back to this point, but this is a critical point that the sages saw in this word in the Torah, a hint that it wasn't a matter of being frightened by what they saw. It wasn't a matter of something changing midstream while they were there, that something took place that said to them, you know, we really can't take this. I thought I was going to be objective, my plan was to, and look what happened, it really is no good. Rashi says not that way. Rashi says when they left, they were already scheming and planning to be able to do that. This is also alluded to, by the way, in the fact that the name of Yehoshua was actually changed by Moshe from Hosea to Yehoshua. He added a Yud to the beginning of his name. And Rashi comments, this is in the very beginning, this is in Pasuk 15. If you look at it inside, Torah says, Eilu Shmosa, just put me back one page, 16, excuse me, thank you. These are the names of the people. Vayikra Moshe LaHoshea ben Nun. Hoshea ben Nun, who was listed at the end of verse 8 of Hoshea ben Nun. Moshe called him Yehoshua. Why the extra Yud? So Rashi says, on the second line in the second column, Nispalel Alav, Moshe prayed for him. Ka, the name of Hashem, the Yud and the He together, is the name of Hashem. Ka Hoshiacha, may Atzas Miraglim. Hashem should save you from the intent of the spies. So that there was, at the very beginning, not only does Rashi tell us they left with the same evil intent at that time at which they came back with, that they already had, Moshe was aware of something going on, and Moshe already puts in a special tefillah for Hoshea ben Nun, adding the Yud to give him the beginning of his name, not just a Hey, but now a Yud and a Hey in the beginning of his name, a symbolism that Hashem should be at the beginning of his name to help give him the strength to spare him from the intent of the spies. So we'll get back to this, but this is an important point that the sages saw in this episode, not just a people becoming frightened and overwhelmed by what they saw, but something with an intent that went in beforehand, which allowed for things to play themselves out as they did. Yeah?
Is Moshe complicit in any way? Because he said, is it good or bad? Is it strong or weak? Is it, you know, I mean, he gave them, in a sense, an opening to think. Why would Moshe Rabbeinu be telling us to look, to see? Is it good or bad? Is it, you know, why are they there for them to think?
It's true. I don't think it's any more of a foot in the door than the fact they were being sent in the first place. What were they being sent for? And Hashem says, I'm going to take you there. And the people say, well, we need to send out some spies. So Moshe is giving them some concrete thoughts as to what to be looking for. And you're not wrong in saying that, yeah, they picked up on that. But we'll see in a moment as we learn through what their actual response was, there's a way, you know, some newspapers or news agencies claim, we just report the information and you decide. Now, what they're attempting to do is deal with that falsehood, which is really impossible. Anyone who's reporting the news is reporting it from their perspective. They have an angle, they have an understanding. There's no way around it. So because of everyone's so biased, so some news agencies want to say, no, not us. We're objective. We are just giving you the facts, and you decide as to how you'd like to interpret that. Which, of course, is just as impossible as anyone else's claim. But that's their claim, at least. So the spies had an option of giving at least over the facts, or giving their editorial comments on it. So, yes, there was an opening, so to speak, but there was an opening to say, they're strong, and there's an opening to say, they're strong and we can't take them. That's, one is reporting facts, and one is giving your editorial comments. So we'll see as we get to them where that will go. But in any case, what I want to point out is we just begin their return. Rashi already points out that it was known, something already in the beginnings of this journey, that there were some undercurrents. In the very beginning, the sages point out they left with the same evil intent upon with which they came back. Moshe is already davening for Yehoshua even before they left. All right, let's continue with their actual report. We are on page 800 on the very bottom, verse 27, Pasuk Chof Zayin. So the people have come back. They're giving their report to Moshe, to Aaron, and the entire assembly all at the same time. And they have showed them the fruit of the land, these large clusters of grapes and pomegranates and figs, an impressive showing of what the land is able to produce. Now let's learn what they actually say. Vayisapru lo. They report to him. Who's him?
Moshe.
It's got to be Moshe, right? So they report to Moshe in front of, however, everybody. They say, we arrived at the land to which you sent us. We have done what you have told. Indeed, it is a land that flows with milk and honey. And these are its fruits. Now this phrase should be familiar to all of us. Why is this phrase so familiar?
Israel is known today.
Now forget about just today. Why do we know this phrase? Right, better than just today. It's known because the Torah says Hashem promises us all the time, I'm going to bring you to a land that's known as an Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash. They didn't make up this phrase. This is a phrase that's been borrowed because Hashem himself has used this phrase to describe the land, and indeed to say the spies say it is. So when the Jewish people hear this, when you hear someone say that, what rings in your ears?
Truth,
correct. That's the word I was hoping for. This rings as true. The person who is standing before me speaks the truth. Because what am I expecting him to say? It's a land that flows with milk and honey. God has promised it to be a land that flows with milk and honey. And here is the proof. They have brought back fruits that are, what do they say today? Ginormous? They're making up all these new words for big things. Right? These tremendous fruits. They've been carried on poles. There's an entire piece of the Gemara. It's unbelievable. The Gemara debates for a page exactly how they were carried. Were there four poles and two people and three people and five? How, based on the way the pasuk describes it, how large these fruits were and how they were carried back in. And the spies open up and they say, yes, indeed, it is a land that flows with milk and honey. Says Rashi, such an important understanding, fundamental point for our own lives. Says Rashi in the top of page 802, so Vas Chalav Udvashi, in the words, that is a land that flows with milk and honey, Kol Davar Sheker, anything that is a falsehood, any item of untruth that is not true, She'ein Omrim Bo Ktsas Emes B'Tchilaso, but does not have a little bit of truth in its beginning, Ein Miskayim B'Sofo, will not remain in the end. Sheker, that stands alone, if it is only a falsehood, if it is a made-up principle that has no element of truth to it, will never last. Can't stand. It's got nothing to it. So if you want Sheker to last, if you want some falsehood to remain, you should know the Gemara says, I see you all laughing because I said that in a funny way, but the Gemara says, one of the reasons I forget exactly the context of the Gemara, but one of the things that happens through learning is you can learn how to be a conniving fellow. Because through all of the details and the intricacies of halacha, so you could, if I do it like this or like that or like that, then I can get away with this, this, or that. And it's all part of getting an entire picture understanding of something. When you really understand it well, you learn how to circumvent the system. So I said it in a way like, if you want, I'll make falsehood laugh. But the truth is, the Rashi is telling us a principle, an important principle. When falsehood has MS attached to it, the falsehood will stick around a lot longer. And the spies utilize, when they return, what's the first thing out of their mouth? Truth. The first thing that they say, this is a land that flows with milk and honey, and look at its fruits. And all the people perk up and they say, yes, true. So happy to hear that. That's what God promised, and they have found truth. And when truth precedes falsehood, you get very lost. When did the truth cross over into the realm of falsehood? Because the speaker has now begun with truth. I recognize it as truth. I hear it as truth. And then it swerves. And that swerve is sometimes subtle. And it sometimes comes when you don't expect it. And because your guard is down, because after all what he's saying is truth, then it gets lost. This is a critical point. Not just in understanding how the spies pulled this off, where they sold the people on it, but just in terms of being aware, and in terms of our own lives, we always have to deal with this. How that works. I share with you a thought from Shlomo Volva, Zechasavuk Mevracha. He writes that he quotes a Gemara in Shabbos. Gemara in Shabbos, it's an oft-quoted Gemara. You might not have heard it as quoted from the Gemara in Shabbos, but the Gemara describes the difference between the words MS and Sheker. The concepts of truth, MS, Sheker is false. And the Gemara makes two fascinating insights into the words of MS and Sheker. Of course, the Hebrew language is a language where words are not made up just because of convenience, like most languages of the world, but the words of the Hebrew language are the words themselves. Hashem used his words to create the world. I'm mentioning a concept that's a much deeper hour shmooze unto itself, but we'll leave it at that for now. The word sheker come from three letters which are consecutive in the alphabet. You have the resh, kuf, resh, shin are the three letters which make up the word sheker. Out of order, the Shin Kofir, but those three letters all come at the very end of the Aleph-Bays and are three consecutive letters in the Aleph-Bays. The Shin Kof Resh, which make up the letter Sheker, all come together. This is in contradistinction to the word Emes, the Gemara says. The word Emes, the Aleph, is the first letter. Mem is in the middle, and the Tuf is at the end. So the Gemara makes that point. The Gemara says Sheker all comes together, and Emes is spread out evenly across the Aleph-Bays. And then the Gemara says, and not only that, but you also find in the words Sheker that it stands on a singular point. The letter Shin comes to a point at the bottom of the letter. No more markers. So you just have to imagine, so to speak, in the Hebrew letter Shin, it's not across like that, it comes to a point. So you have the Shin, and the kuf just has its one, based on a resh where it stands on itself, and then the resh has the same thing where it just comes to a singular point at the bottom. The word MS, all three of those letters have two legs upon which they stand. The aleph, which stands on the two separate letters, and the mem, made of a leg, and the two legs which come together is, I don't know if I'm making that clear at all, but there, this mem stands, this comes down in the Torah, the letter actually comes down, you have this leg and this leg, and the tuf, which of course also has the two separate legs upon which it stands. So we want to make that point, that the word sheker comes from three consecutive letters in the Aleph-Bays, whereas the letter MS has the three letters dispersed, interspersed throughout the Aleph-Bays, and that the letter sheker, all the letters stand on one leg, as opposed to the letters of the word MS have the two legs upon which they stand. So the Mefarshim all point out on this Gemara, and that's because Sheker cannot stand on itself. It is not a concept that stands. It's all weighted towards one side. And if you try to weight something all on one side, three consecutive letters, it tips over. comes at you with a lot of power and force right away. It's overpowering three letters in the same point, but it can't stand. It doesn't have the staying capability, the staying capacity. The letters themselves don't have, they're not rooted in something balanced. And a sheker will always eventually fall, as opposed to emes, which is balanced throughout. Each letter, aside for the placement in the aliphate, but each letter is balanced, is has stability and is what we call kayim, it has the staying powers, eternity, it's eternal. Because of the concept of truth. The Gemara says the seal of Hashem himself is that of truth. That which is truth has that element of godliness in it. It is a concept of truth. It is eternal, it is real, it is true, as opposed to the concepts of sheker. The reason why this gets so difficult is because those who know how to manipulate sheker tie sheker in to emes. As Rashi here quotes, when sheker is preceded by emes, so you get lost, because it started with truth. It gets started with that which is real, not which has staying power, and then it veers. And for us to know when it veers and when it doesn't, is a difficult task. And I'm not going to get political, because I'm not interested in doing so, but it's just the Sefer was written over 20 years ago, almost 30 years ago at this point, and he writes, a concept of this are those who, when they speak, will add to their speeches words of truth, or love, or change, or whatever, in which they speak truths. And he brings this whole list of examples of things. So, but you have to know that even when persons, they say, he gives a whole list of merciful concepts, or and those are all true, and those are all concepts that everybody holds of and believes in. And but he says, when you're listening to somebody speak, and they throw in concepts of truth, that doesn't mean everything that they're saying is true, just that their concepts of truth are being used. And that is a powerful tool, because now it gets all confused. So, nothing political, but just to be aware of all politicians, because they all do that. And that's what it is. It's a lesson for us as listeners, when people speak, to decipher that which is truth and that which is false. In any case, Rashi says, that is the first tactic that the spies use. That is the first tactic that the spies use, in which they introduce their words with Eretz Zovas Chalav Udvash. It's a land indeed that flows with milk and honey. These are its fruits, and that is all true. Continue the spies. Efes Ki Az Ha'om Hayoshev Bo'aretz. But the people that dwells in the land is powerful. The cities are fortified and very great. Gam yulidei ho'anak ra'inu shom. We also saw the offspring of the giants. And then they give a list of who dwells there. Amalek yoshev be'eret ha'negev. Ha'chiti v'ha'yevusi v'ha'emori yoshev bahar. The Amalekis, they dwell in the south, and the Chitim and the Yevusim and the Amorim dwell in the mountain. V'ha'kna'ani yoshev al hayom v'al'yad ha'yardin. Period. End of their report. What's so bad about this report? What did they do? They started off by saying, it's a land flowing with milk and honey. These are its fruits. And then they said what they saw. The people are powerful. This is getting back to Eleanor's comment. They're reporting what they were asked to do. Moshe had, Ramban points out, in their response, they're answering the questions that Moshe had asked of them. Find out, says Moshe, are the people powerful or are they weak? Say the spies in verse 28, the people that dwells in the land is powerful. Find out, said Moshe, are the cities fortified or are they open field cities? Say the people, the cities are fortified and very great. What are the nature of the peoples? They are giants. They reported who lives there. Says the Ramban, at this point, what did they do? Where in this report, do we in this report find anything inappropriate? So the Ramban comments that there's one word here that's a problem. The word but. It's correct. The Ramban says all in this comment, at this point, they have not overtly done anything. They have not overtly made a comment that said, we can't take this. At this point, all that they did is they said the word but. We always know when someone opens a sentence and you're just waiting for that but, because that but means, basically, forget about everything that I said. Right? Everyone goes, Before you give a criticism, you should give a compliment. So you say, you spoke very nicely, but forget it. It's like you find a better way to do it than that. That tactic doesn't work anymore today, right? I know you're just saying that because you're looking to get to the but. All that you mean to tell me is whatever comes after the word but. So says the Ramban, the problem comes in their but. That word is an editorial comment. That word says, but it's too much. Yes, these are. It's a great land. It's a land flowing with milk and honey. It's a land. It's a land which produces these kinds of fruits. But it's a very powerful land. Implicit within that is, and we keep, well, we can't take it. Now they haven't said it yet. The spies have not overtly said anything, but the people understand. How do we know that the people understand? So we'll see that from the following pasuk. We'll just do it now. The pasuk 30, pasuk lamed. Vayahas kolev esha'am el Moshe. Kolev silenced the people toward Moshe. Why is he silencing the people towards Moshe? Why? Apparently the people got upset. Apparently the people got all rowdy. There was a ruckus that went out amongst the people. So that even though they didn't, if you just read this, you almost wonder, like, why is he saying, what happened? What did they say? They didn't really say anything. But in that word, but, they said it in a way where it's clear that the people lost it. And Kalev comes to silence them. Before we get to that, I want to point out one other comment that Rashi makes. When the spies come in to give the report, they say, people are powerful, cities are fortified, offsprings of the giant, and then they list the nations. Who's the first nation that they list? So when you're the people and you're listening to this, and you're beginning to get worried because they said that the land flows with milk and honey, and then they say this word, but it's powerful. Cities are fortified, giants, and then the first name of the nation that you hear is Amalek. What does that conjure up in the Jewish people's minds? We just fought a battle with Amalek. They were the first nation that attacked us when we came out of the land of Mitzrayim. We have a history with them. Some of these other nations, we have no history. We haven't been there yet. These other nations all live in the land of Israel. Our task is to go there, conquer, and settle it for ourselves. But we don't have any experience at this point as a Jewish people with these nations, except for Amalek. Rashi points out that's the first thing that they said. Since they already were attacked by the people of Amalek, his kiruhu miraglim kideli yorim. The miraglim mentioned them to frighten them off, put them on the defensive, because they already, they lived in the area of the south. Were they even in Eretz Yisrael proper? They attacked the Jewish people right when they left Mitzrayim. But they're mentioned because it's creating a hysteria. Mentioning the people of Amalek is sure to bring that out. So in any case, what we see, moving along, we have the people come back with their report. They haven't overtly said anything negative, but they've clearly done it in a way that has riled the people up. Kalev, one of our two righteous spies, picks up on this, and Vayahas Kalev Esa'om El Moshe, silences the people towards Moshe. Vayoymer Alona Alev Yerashnu Oso, we can go up, we shall surely ascend and conquer, Ki Yochol Nuchola, we can do it. Clearly he's responding to people who feel that they cannot do it, and he is silencing the people claiming that in fact they can. Says Rashi, there's an interesting phrase here. Kolev silenced the people toward Moshe. Again, that last phrase is extra. It should have simply said, Kolev silenced the people so that he can speak. The Torah describes it in a funny way. He silenced the people, El Moshe, towards Moshe. What does it mean to silence the people towards Moshe? Moshe isn't doing any speaking here. Kolev is speaking. Why is he silencing the people towards Moshe? So Rashi makes a comment, which you may or may not have come across in the past. Rashi says, El Moshe lishmoya mashi yedaber bi Moshe. He began to speak as if he had something else to say on Moshe. Rashi here gives us another amazing insight as to how to get people to listen to you. He already told us, if you have something to say and it's not true, the trick is, you know, he's not saying in a way that you should fool people, but that's what Rashi is saying. When you have sheker that's preceded by emes, it's going to be much more of a powerful message. Rashi now says something else very powerful. Kalev was unclear, not he was unclear, the people were unclear as to which side of the equation Kalev falls. Yoshua is one of the 12. There's no doubt where Yoshua falls in this. Yoshua is the primary disciple of Moshe Rabbeinu. Yoshua was given the blessing by Moshe himself before they left, that he should be spared from the advice and ideas of the spot. Yeshua is for sure going to be on Moshe's side on this issue. 10 of them already have gotten up and started with not such a good thing today. Kalev is unclear where he's going to fall. So Kalev gets up in the midst of all of this and says, I have something else to say about Moshe. Oh, you also have something to say? Shh. Or Yahas, Rashi pointed out the Has, the root of that word is the silence. Everyone wanted to hear what Kalev has to say about Moshe. Continues Rashi. Tzovach the Omar. He started screaming, I'm six lines down in the first column of Rashi. Pasuk Lamed. Tzovach the Omar. He started screaming, V'chizu bilvad osalonu ben Amram. Is this the only thing that Moshe has done for us? Hashomeyo hayasovar shebola safer bignuso. So everybody listening thought he was ready to start talking derogatorily about Moshe. Because right now there's a hysteria that's breaking out amongst the people. The spies have implied that there's no way that we can take it. Everyone's all up in arms. What's going to be? We're out in the middle of the desert. We can't move forward. What did Moshe do for us? Says Kalev, and he gets up and he screams, is this the only thing that Moshe has done for us? Everyone thinks that now he's going to levy some more tainus, some more complaints, some more things that Moshe has done. So everybody stops to listen. Umitayich shahaya belibom al Moshe. Listen to these words, because it was already in their hearts against Moshe, because of what the spies have said. They've already in their hearts turned against Moshe, the people. Shosku kulam lishmoya ginuso. They all silenced themselves. They all stopped to hear what derogatory things he would have to say against Moshe. The insight here is fantastic. It's piercing. The people already had in their hearts something against Moshe. Therefore, says Rashi, they silenced themselves to hear what Kalev had to say. Had Yehoshua tried to do this, what would have happened? Never would have gotten the words out. He never would have gotten the words out. There was too much background noise, too many people yelling and screaming. If Yehoshua had tried to silence them, There's a phrase someone introduced to me once of, I'm already listening. I mean, I already know what you're going to say before you even say it. You don't even have to open up your mouth. I already know what's coming. Had Yehoshua gotten up to speak, what would he have been saying? He would have been furthering the spy's claim. He would have been arguing with the spy. Everybody knows what Yehoshua would have done. He would have been trying to defend it. But in our hearts, we don't want to hear that. We're already angry at Moshe. We're against him. We've been turned against him by what the spies have said. Yehoshua never would have gotten the words out. Kalev, they don't know which side he's on. When Kalev gets up there and he says, is this all that Moshe has done? Says Rashi, the people think he's going to further the derogatory statements on Moshe. And because in their hearts, mitoch shahoyu b'libom al Moshe b'shvil divrei hamaraglim, because it was already in their hearts, because of what the spies said, they all wanted to hear what he has to say. It's an amazing insight as to who we listen to and who we don't listen to. When someone's saying something, and we already in our minds know we are going to agree with what they are going to be saying, we'll listen to what they have to say. When we already know I'm not going to agree with what they're going to say, I don't even hear what they're saying. I don't hear it. We don't have an intellectual debate. We don't have an intelligent conversation. We're just taking turns saying what we want to say. You speak to yourself while I wait for you to finish, and then I speak to myself while you wait for me to finish, and then you'll say something, and we'll go back and forth. Nothing is resolved because no one's listening. No one really cares. The insight is so penetrating, the only reason why they stopped to hear what he had to say is because they thought he was going to say something which they wanted to hear. Fascinating insight. It's beautiful. And then Kalev, now he's got everyone's attention. He thinks that everybody's on his side. The insight here, in terms of a mass, just dealing with large masses of people and getting an idea across. How the sages say the spies started with the truth. They got everybody's attention. Kalev needs to get everybody's attention. So he gets into them by saying, I'm going to say something that you want to hear. You're all riled up against Moshe. I got something on Moshe. Oh, let's listen to what he has to say. And then he says, Omar v'halokara lonu es hayom. I got what to say about Moshe. Is this all that Moshe's done? He brought us out here into the desert. He split the sea for us too. Remember that, guys? V'horu lonu es haman. He's the one who brought down the man from the heavens for us. And he brought the fowl, the birds which we've been eating, the meat. Look at all the things that Moshe has been doing. So the way that he gets in to be able to remind the people, so to speak, of that which Moshe has done, is he starts off by getting in to think that they think he's going to continue what they want to hear about his genai, things that are derogatory towards him. And instead, once he's got their attention, now he's able to say what he needs to say. And he says, remember, this is Moshe Rabbeinu. This is the person who brought us through the sea. This is the person who's fed us in the desert. He's brought us meat in the desert. This is the person who'll be able to lead us into Eretz Yisrael. That's Kalev's way of trying to be able to get in. At this point, if the Torah would have stopped, it would be unclear to me whether or not what would have happened here. I don't know. Now you have the spies initially giving the report. They have not overtly said anything impossible. They did that big word, but, that it's too powerful. People apparently broke into a hysteria because Kalev has to silence them using this ploy that they think he's going to be saying something that they want to hear, turning it on their heads and saying, but this is Moshe Rabbeinu. Which way would the people go at this point? Which way? You now have Kalev, the individual, clearly with Yeshua on his side, standing up on behalf of Moshe and the mission to take Eretz Yisrael. You have the 10 spies coming back with this big word saying, but it's too powerful. Which way do the people go? Unclear. Unclear what they would have done because the spies took matters into their own hands. Continues the Torah, V'ha'anashim asher olu imo amru lo nuchal la'alos el ha'am. They don't leave it to that decision for the people which way to go. The people then ascended, they go up and they say, we cannot do it. We cannot take these people. Ki chazak hu mimenu. It is too strong for us. Rashi comments, Chazaku mimenu, that's a funny phrase. Kaviyochol, he says, Kapi malo, as if they're speaking on Hashem. It's too strong for him. Too strong for even Hashem to be able to take us into the land of Eretz Yisrael. Continuing, Lamed Beis, Vayotziu, Dibas Oretz, Asher Toru, Osol, Bnei Yisrael. They brought forth to the children of Israel an evil report on the land that they had spied out. What do you mean they brought out? They literally dispersed themselves amongst the people. They brought it out. They went around passing on their message. It's a land that it eats up its inhabitants. It consumes its inhabitants. All the people are giants. They are all huge. They are a land which eats up its inhabitants. And last pasuk, Lamed Gimel, V'shom ra'inu es ha'nefilim b'nei anak min ha'nefilim. There we saw these giants. And then they comment, V'nehi be'einenu kachagovim. We were like grasshoppers in our eyes. In our eyes, we felt like grasshoppers in their presence. And we were so in their eyes as well. They even have the audacity to speak as to how they perceived, how the giants perceived the spies. That we were perceived as grasshoppers as well, and that is their claim. And from here they go on, which we'll maybe focus on a different year. The Torah describes in the beginning of Perek Yidal, the people then cry and they weep, and then that's the end of it. So as far as us studying their report, so you have a back and forth in which first they give a report which is not all that bad. It only has that word FS in it. Apparently that was enough to bring out some form of hysteria. Kalev tries to silence them by getting in to have them listen to him, saying that Moshe Rabbeinu has been able to do all these things. He surely will bring us into Eretz Yisrael. The people then, the spies respond again. Here they actively say, no way, there is no way we can take it. They are too strong. It is a land which eats its inhabitants. The giants, we are all like grasshoppers in their eyes. We felt like grasshoppers ourselves. We can't take it. And they sell the people on that report. Rashi comments on the idea that it's an Eretz Ocheles Es Yosheveha. It's a land which eats its inhabitants. Where do they get this idea that it's a land which eats its inhabitants? So Rashi quotes the second line in the second column, Ocheles Yosheveha. Rashi says, B'chol mokom she'avarno mitza'anum kovrei meisim. Everywhere where we went, we found them burying the dead. There were funerals everywhere. We went to this place, a funeral, that place, a funeral. Bizarre. Have you ever been to a place where you travel up and down through the country, north, south, east, west? Funerals everywhere. Says Rashi, Yivakalish Baruch Hu asal l'toiva. Really, Hashem was looking out for them. Kedei l'tirdeim ba'avleim, so that the people should be busy with their mourning. There was like a plague which broke out in the land, so that there are funerals taking place. People are busy caring for, taking care of the dead, mourning their losses. But lo yindu lev la'elu, they shouldn't pay attention to these spies. There are these people running through the town, running through the country, 12 of them, not a small number, going throughout, spying it out. So Hashem, Rashi quotes, the Gemara in Sota says, in order to distract, so to speak, the nations of the world, there were funerals busy taking place all over. The people perceived the funerals, and they come back with a report that it's a land which buries its dead. It's not a survivable environment. You can't, it's not hospitable. You can't live there. Look, we went, and all that we saw were funerals everywhere. Now, this idea, we'll finish up with this and tie it in a little bit. Rav Volbeck and Shlomo Volbeck, I quoted before, write on this idea that this really sums up the whole issue. That concept is a classic concept, as we mentioned when you talk about a news report, what I said earlier. An event happens in the world. So when an event happens in the world, so there was an event. What does the event mean? What is the significance of the event? What's going to happen because of this event? So I don't, we can interpret it in lots of different ways. Good thing, bad, who knows? You know, just to bring an extreme example, just to flesh out the point, when a number of airplanes crashed into the World Trade Towers, causing thousands of losses of lives. So in American news reports, the opening line was, a tremendous tragedy is just taking place. On certain Arab airwaves, a tremendous victory has taken place. So who's right? Who's right? You know, it depends on your perspective. From our perspective, there was a tremendous tragedy, a loss of human life for no reason, and there is no greater tragedy than that. But if you have a different agenda in the world, so then you interpret that exact same event. That's not a tragedy. This is a victory. That's an obvious extreme example, but everything that takes place is like that. Depending on the perspective of the one who's observing it, they interpret it in the way that they want to interpret it. The spies saw funerals. They saw funerals. That's true. It was an Eretz Ochelos L'Shoshvei. There were funerals taking place all over the place. Why were there funerals? What's the meaning? What's the significance of that fact? So someone who goes in with a mindset of this is going to, Hashem has promised us His land, would see that which Rashi quotes, Hashem is taking care of us. Look at the distractions taking place all around us. We are able to move around freely. We don't have to worry about anything. No one can pay attention to us. They're busy with funerals all over. When you go with a different mindset, as Rashi quoted, they left with an Eitzah Ra'ah, they left with an evil intent. When you see funerals, what do you really see? You see an inhospitable land. You see a place that you can't survive in. Because look, you can't survive in this. And when you report that, you don't see the goodness of Hashem. What you see is a land that can't be lived in. A land that can't be settled. You can't survive in such a place. Ravola points out this is a larger concept. I just wanted to mention it. He writes, almost all of our actions are born out of our midos. Our midos, our personality traits, are at the root of our actions. Because what happens is we have a certain midah. We have a certain desire. We experience a certain feeling, be it jealousy, be it anger, be it whatever it may be. And then when events in the world take place around them, because of our personality, we will interpret them in certain manners. We will see in them certain things because of where we are coming from. An angry person will see somebody who cut him off while he's driving on the highway as an act of aggression. I start with that midah. When an event happens, how do I read that? How do I interpret that? Which glasses am I wearing when I experience the world around me? I experience it with anger. Well, my actions are then going to be born out of that experience. Someone has just done something aggressive to me, I'm going to respond as such because they did that to me. Who said that they did it? You interpreted, based on where you're coming from, the events which eventually lead to your actions. and at the roots of our jealousy and of our anger and of our desire for honor, for glory, and for all of those things, when we interpret many of the events which take place around us in certain manners, and because of our interpretations of what took place, we act on them because we've interpreted them way. What forces us to interpret them? It goes back to where we are in our own struggles and personality and things that we are working on, always because we are newscasters. Every single moment of our lives, there are events taking place around us, and we are constantly having to interpret them. We must interpret them. Was it an accident? Was it on purpose? Did the person mean to do that? Was it really aggressive? Did they maybe take any simple example? But the way that we're going to interpret it, which is based on our personality traits, are going to determine our course of action in terms of how we feel we must or mustn't respond to them. And he brings this as an example where the spies come back and they say, we cannot live there because it is a land which eats its inhabitants. Is because they went with an Eitzarah. They went with an evil intent. And their evil intent was such, so when they saw events, they interpreted them in certain manners, and they came back and convinced the people of that. What their evil intent was, I want to mention that I'm not mentioning. That's a large discussion, much discussion, what was their intent. But there clearly was something that when they set out, they had an agenda. Rashi mentions that, as we said, twice, both in the fact that Moshe had to daven for Yahushua, that they left in the same way that they came back, and that tipped their hand as to their interpretations of what it is that they saw, which brings back their evil report into what they say to the people. But those are just some of the thoughts, just on this little element of how they actually report, how they come back and report to the Jewish people. Have a wonderful week.